Welcome to House Seats Presents, your live look entertainment here in Las Vegas. I am very excited about today because I have the fabulous Jeff Lebo here across from me. Woohoo! And I said at the start of the show before we went on, I hope I don't get lost in your eyes.
Wow.
You're very captivating sitting across from me right now. He just has a really good smile. If you could capture that right there, he's got you. Life on here.
Great.
So I'll try not to, have a very intense.
If you stammer, I'll try to put you back on.
All right. Okay. All right. And we do have our whiskey here. I think Jeff already polished his off.
I did. There's a sip left. I might use it later.
You might have a little bit of a moment there. And we also have Brandy out there. Hey, Brandy. Woo. So Brandy was, what I do at the beginning of the show is we do a little recap of what we did over the last week.
All right.
And we just, as you're familiar with House Seats Presents, the set list.
Right.
We reprised that with Jagged Little Pill Thursday night at House of Blues.
That's right.
We blew the roof off. And Brandy was in the audience. She was out there. And she says one of the last concerts she actually went to was Alanis Morissette.
Awesome.
So I don't know how long ago that was. Long time ago. But all those songs sort of hit home for you. And she knows, the girls, Sean and look at Anne. I mean, that picture says it all. They just literally bounced and killed it. Nikki Scalera. She's so awesome. So they were all here last week, and Nikki and Sean were here last week. And we told everybody we would tell you a little bit about how that show went. And it was a great turnout. House of Blues. We've gotten big enough that we had two opening bands before the girls went
That's
on.
Great.
Yeah. They were awesome. We had a nice crowd going on in the House of Blues, and so I think they might be our home for some of the future set lists we have going on.
That's great. That's a great venue.
It's really awesome. So just so you know, if you want to get involved in those next few set lists, I'll give you some of the upcoming music. It is Amy Winehouse, Back to Black.
Nice.
Yes, that'll be in April. And then we're doing Van Halen, two albums.
Nice.
In 1984, both albums. And then we're doing Rocky Horror Picture Show in October.
Seriously?
A sort of interactive Rocky Horror.
That's going to be a long list of people knocking on your door for that.
Yes, I think so. And Andy's already, I know, if you want to go to the website, House Seats Presents, put in your contact information. I'm sure Andrew will be very excited about sharing that with you. And then we are going to do a Natalie Cole Unforgettable in December.
That's perfect.
So I know we're going to hit you up for that because Jeff was in our last show at the Foundation Room. He did Angel Eyes on the Sinatra album Main Event, and that was quite a show.
Yeah, it was a great show. It's such a great album. I mean, you can't go wrong when there's great music, but when you get performers like you had, it's just a...
I know. I mean, and I think that was really the first time I actually got to meet you. I don't think we ever really got to interact much before. So I'm very excited about meeting you today and talking to you today.
Well, good.
Also in the news, and not something that happened to us personally, but affects us personally, is we recently lost Rene Angelil, Celine's husband. And, I actually had the chance in 2003 to work with him. I worked on a documentary called Las Vegas Live. It was a show that was done for the Bravo Network back in the day when it was early Bravo. And they did a show called Las Vegas Live and interviewed. I was in charge of wrangling these folks to have them interviewed for this television show. And, we had talked to Clint Holmes, Gladys Knight. I think we talked to Don Rickles, some sort of staples in that way. And then we had an interview with Celine. And we were in her dressing room before a new day one night. And she was great and she was fun. But the most surprising interview of the entire thing was the interview with him, because he knew so much about Vegas entertainment. He obviously was a huge support to his wife. I mean, they've known each other for so long. And he talked about how, we're trying to find this footage, and we talked about his, he mortgaged his house to pay for her first album.
Amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the history, and they've known each other for so long. I mean, the loss is incredible. And then of course she lost her brother like 2 or 3 days later to cancer as well. So our hearts are out with you, are out there to you, Celine, and to your family, at this time. So, one of the interesting stories I was watching, I like to watch, the Oprah Network, the OWN Network. She has this show called Masterclass.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like she interviews people who use their life and talk about some of the struggles and adversities they had in order to, to find their way to where they are now and how to use their life as a legacy. And she had Patti LaBelle on there.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of Patti LaBelle.
So am I.
Oh, she is over the rainbow amazing. Every show she's ever done. Have you ever seen her live?
I have. It's
my
incredible.
She talks about how she never does the same show every time. I mean, it is a totally a different show. And for a performer who sings the same songs over and over again, she changes it up every single time.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen her more than once to know that. But yeah, she's incredible.
She'll be back. She usually plays Prim, so we'll have to go out one night.
All right.
So I actually, that's one of the stories I actually wanted to share. And I apologize in advance for all that I'm taking up airtime right now about this. But the one thing she was talking about is living your life on purpose. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to talk to you about today. But my most interesting memory with her is I worked with her on the Grammys several years ago. And she was there doing a surprise performance of Lady Marmalade with the girls that remade it, you know, the Christinas and stuff.
Right, I saw that.
Yeah. So she pops out at the end of the song and starts coming out with the song. And after the show was over, and I'm walking her, I was her escort, I'm walking her out the Staples Center, she runs into Celine and Renee. And literally, and first of all, Patty was almost like royalty walking around the Staples Center because she's been around for a long time.
Right.
And she's still using her talent.
Patty LaBelle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She hasn't lost it. And so everyone in the entire the place, they, you know, they'd walk by and they'd say hi. Celine literally got so excited. Like a celebrity getting that excited, I was shocked.
Isn't that cool to see?
Yeah. She literally stopped us on the walk out, and she had the funniest thing. I don't know how many years ago this was. I think it might have been 2005. Celine had a disposable camera.
I love it.
And was like literally clicking it in place. And I was taking the photo. I took the photo of Renee, Celine, and Patti LaBelle with a disposable camera.
Awesome.
And she was so excited to run into Patti LaBelle of all people.
That's great. It reminds you that there are stars out there who are humbled by the people who inspired them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, you know, one of those, and you know, Celine remade one of Patty's famous songs was If You Ask Me To, which one of the things I wanted to talk about today is, you know, she wrote that song right after, or that she did that song right after she lost one of her sisters. And Patty has lost three sisters to cancer.
Right.
All of her sisters, basically. And her mom battled diabetes and her dad passed away from Alzheimer's. So in our lives and the things you think about living on purpose and doing what it is that you do and the talent that you're given to use it for something greater than what you originally thought you had it for.
Yeah. You know, I honestly think that that's the way that every person with talent should live. I mean, if they've got a talent, it can be lended to more than just their careers. And it's so easy, especially when you're in the spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, I would hope that everybody would at least give that a shot.
Well, we created the set list to honor different charities throughout the year last year. And I know we first came to know each other in that way because Andrew has known you a long time.
Right.
And Vegas has known you a long time. You've been with us for Jersey Boys since it started at the Palazzo.
2008.
Before 2008.
Yeah.
And prior to that, were you in Jersey Boys elsewhere or was...
I was, the Las Vegas company actually started while the Palazzo was under construction.
Oh, okay.
So we were in San Francisco, which was great because it was my hometown.
Okay.
Performing at the Curran Theater
for a little bit
before the end of 2007. And that was sort of the beginning of my time with Jersey Boys. But then when we opened here, we all came and opened up the Palazzo and then opened up our theater and Jersey Boys. And then I just took that ride. Yeah. It was a...
And you played the role of Nick Massey.
I did for almost 7 years. I think it works out to well over 2,700 performances.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Now in that same vein, and I've seen the show, and I may have seen it with you because I saw it in the beginning with Rick Fonio.
Yeah.
And then recently saw it with Travis, mm-hmm. Not so far back. But yeah, you probably were the Nick when I saw the show at Palazzo.
I was. I opened until the end of 2014. I was Nick from the time we opened.
Now, how did you keep that fresh in your mind doing that show?
Well, first of all, it's a great show.
Yeah.
You know, I've done shows that I could probably be happy ending after 2 months.
Yeah.
and I've done shows I've maybe wanted to do longer, but I've never done a show like Jersey Boys. I mean, it was one of those shows that, you know, just the excitement of getting to do that every night was enough to get me through 7 years.
Yeah.
But the fact that you get to sing these incredible songs, I mean, the songbook for the Four Seasons is kind of unbelievable. And Bob Gaudio is as prolific as he was, you know, he continued to outdo himself mm-hmm. all the time. And we got to sing those songs every night.
Yeah. I know when I was talking to Travis, the same thing. I mean, and I had slipped into the audience right at intermission to see the show the night before we chatted. And, you know, it's the audience.
Yeah.
You're really basing a lot of it off the audience for interaction where they've heard songs.
Right.
Or like when we were talking, Brandy and I were talking about even the Alanis show, when you hear a song and it brings you back,
right,
people there react differently. So you're definitely playing off the audience reaction at that point.
Yeah, well, you know, nostalgia is part of it, but I think some of the most exciting stuff is when you'd see people who had never really heard these songs before or maybe didn't connect with them.
Right.
And then you'd be doing this show and singing these songs, and suddenly you'd see, you know, this 90-year-old couple sitting in the front row holding hands whose kids maybe listened to this, but they weren't familiar with it.
Yeah.
Or the 6-year-old came with their family and is suddenly grooving along to these songs that preceded their lives by decades.
Right.
Those were the really magical moments. I mean, the nostalgia of it was really cool, and seeing people talk about, you know, they come up to you afterwards and say, I remember when I was driving in the car with my friends when that song played for the first time, and that's cool too. But I mean, there was so much about it that made it such an amazing experience, but it wasn't just the nostalgia.
Well, I think for that specific show, and we talked about this too, Travis and I, was, you know, the difference of that show's writing as opposed to, say, Mamma Mia, where it's sort of a fictitious pull together. This is true, you know, to the lives of Frankie Valli and the ups and downs of the music business that they shared together that no one really got to see because we didn't have, you know, Twitter, Facebook,
right,
you know, local, you know, news that covered this kind of storyline that told you, you know, the ins and outs of having to pay off, you know, $1 million of, you know, buying the other, you know, one gentleman out of the show or out of the band, to how that actually worked and the struggles and triumphs that you guys have together.
Yeah. You know, it makes it such a great show, but you know that initially Jersey Boys was going to be a Mamma Mia. They were going to put a fictitious story up with those music, and they thought, just to get an idea of the time period and, you know, do their work for the dramaturgy. And they talked to these guys, and as soon as they started talking to them, they said, forget this. We don't need to write a fictitious story. We've got one here.
And it became
what we know as, you know, as, well, gosh, Tony Award winning, Olivier Award winning. I mean, there's more awards, and it's been playing in more cities than so many musicals, and still going strong on Broadway after 10 years.
Yeah. And prior to that, what was your first foray into Broadway or in your first musicals? Tell me about some of the history of the fun shows you've been in.
You know, it's funny. My very first show happened on a dare.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who was a dancer, and I will absolutely claim that I was not a dancer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm barely a dancer now after years of training, and I certainly wasn't a dancer then. She said, I dare you to come with me to this audition for a chorus line.
Oh, wow.
And when I was at UC Davis getting a degree in zoology, about as far away from theater as you can get. And
I don't know. And, animals.
fair enough. It's all animals,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
I landed the role of Mark, and I was told after the fact it was because I walked into the audition as wide-eyed as they wanted the character to be.
Right.
And, wow. You know, I look back on that. Somewhere there's a video floating around of that, because that was, you know, something illegal that was done a lot then. I'm embarrassed. I hope that video never surfaces again.
Oh, but I think we'll have you next time and we'll find it.
but I mean, that's where it started.
Yeah.
And the moment I stepped on stage, I fell in love with it.
Wow.
And I learned to sing, which I didn't really know how to do. And I learned to dance, which I didn't really know how to do. Actually, I absolutely didn't know how to do. And so I've done a lot of shows along the way. You know, some favorites are ones that don't involve any dancing at all.
Yeah, right.
And actually, I would probably still choose those as my favorite. But last 5 years, one of my favorite shows, just me and one other person, a girl. And it's a great story of a relationship between two people that goes in reverse. His story goes forward and hers goes backwards.
Oh, wow.
And the only time they spend time on stage together is in the middle when they meet and get married. And it's an amazing, amazing show. So I've done shows like that. I've done bigger shows like, you know, Smokey Joe's, where I was on a massive stage with a beautiful set. And
they're bringing that back, I guess, too.
Yeah. 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 I've done a lot more than I realize, but, you know, Jersey Boys, it was such an amazing experience. It was certainly the pinnacle of my career. Although, you know, I'm still young. There's more to come.
There's definitely more to come. And I think for Jersey Boys, I mean, how, I ask this question a lot. I mean, obviously that show brought you to Vegas,
right,
but however anyone else ends up in Vegas, I mean, you were married at the time when you moved to the show.
Yeah.
So how did your wife take moving to Vegas from the Bay Area or nicer backgrounds than Vegas? I'm from here, so I can say that. So,
well, honestly, we're about to make the move to New York.
Okay.
This job saved her from the move to New York that I think she was more scared of than Vegas.
Oh.
But when I moved, she was on tour with a production of Cabaret.
Okay.
And,
And
so I didn't even see her through the entire move. She came, literally landed about a week before we had our first preview in Vegas.
So you're both in the show world, so to speak.
And we came from the Bay Area, you know, San Francisco area, where you know, what we paid here for a beautiful apartment bought us a hole in the wall.
Right.
And so, you know, that makes the move a little bit less painful, but this has now become our home. You know, our daughter was born here. It's always been pretty easy to transition to Vegas, more so than I ever expected. But, you know, now we're here and I love this town.
We're happy. I mean, that's one of the things Andy and I talk about, is you keep the talent here. Even when you moved on from a show, you stay here because this is a very, very awesome community that supports a lot of causes and is a very generous community in that aspect. But we love when the talent stays here.
Yeah.
So I was telling Nikki last week, or Sean, when Sean goes on tour with Meatloaf, or Nikki's out doing another show, the talent pool stays here.
Yeah.
And that's really gratifying for us to have you in our backyard and to have you, you know, put on concerts and events outside of the shows that you're in, so that we can keep things moving along in the community, that everybody wants to keep things moving.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you know, we're happy that you're here.
It's kind of an amazing community, the performing arts community here. You know, it's all in general always very supportive of one another, but here more so than I've ever experienced. And there's probably more talent in this town than anybody is aware of.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that have played with some of the most famous musicians, as well as some of those musicians actually singing on the Strip every night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they call this the entertainment capital of the world. And it took me a little while to realize, but it truly is. There is more talent here than almost anywhere in the world.
And so when you left Jersey Boys, you left in 2014 and you left to start or to pay more attention to the Neurofibromatosis Foundation that you've started, the Concert of Hope that you've started.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
It started when my daughter was diagnosed with the neurological disorder neurofibromatosis, or NF, much easier to say.
I know, it's a little, stumble over it, but yeah.
But it's the simplest explanation. She was born with a mutation on a gene that prevents tumors from growing.
Mm.
And the result is tumors can grow on any nerve in the body at any time. There's a whole slew of symptoms that come along with that. But, you know, after knowing about it for this long and watching her, she has easily 24 tumors that we've discovered. She has a couple of brain tumors, one of which sadly is has grown significantly in the last year. So we're looking at jerry-rigging a treatment, probably chemotherapy for her, which is the most frustrating thing about this is just, there is no treatment. There's no cure. There's no treatment. So when I left Jersey Boys, you know, it was because I knew that. I started in 2011, started a concert called the NF Hope Concert.
Okay.
And it was faced with nothing else to do, literally, for my daughter. We did this. You know, my wife and I said, look, we have friends on the Strip who are talented. Let's put together a concert, very sort of Gershwin-esque, a concert in a barn, and raise some awareness. And the first year was exciting, but you know, financially it was a flop. But we made our mark, and people immediately asked, when's the next one? And every year we've grown more and more and more. And this last year we're coming close to breaking $100,000.
Wow.
On what was the fifth annual NF Hope concert. That's what led me out of Jersey Boys, is wanting to take this and grow it. So back in 2014, I was asked by NF Network, one of the national organizations out there, if I would consider producing these around the country. I've planted this in Vegas and we'll keep it here. But, you know, now I've got my sights on Los Angeles, and I've got meetings in Washington, D.C. in the next few weeks. And I'm looking at D.C. and New York. I mean, Chicago and New York as well. And, you know, I would love one day for there to be 24 of these concerts every year, so that when somebody asks, you know, what does your daughter have? They know what neurofibromatosis is.
Yeah.
They don't have to come to me to ask how to pronounce it. They know what it is. And that's why I do what I do. And that's actually why I left Jersey Boys, to make sure it happens.
So you're knocking on the doors of politicians here in the state of Nevada, in Washington,
mm-hmm.
and you're also the folks that you know in town here who are musicians and performers are coming together for these concerts as well.
Yeah. Nice. Such a generous group of performers mm-hmm. here in this town. You know, I'm never shy of talent. As a matter of fact, this last year I had to turn people away.
Yeah.
This is a good problem to have, but they all wanted to be a part of this. And some have from the very beginning. Clint Holmes mm-hmm. And Kristen Herzenberg have literally been at every single concert since we started. And there's so many more that want to be a part of it. You know, the cast of Jersey Boys, every year they'll be a part, but it's, they lend their talent because they know it's going to make a difference in somebody's lives. And like I said earlier, that's what every performer should do. Anybody with talent should make sure that they take some of that talent and apply it to something that makes a difference on a grander scale.
Well, I think it's a huge, you know, paying homage to you as a performer, that you have realized your talent is all, like you're saying, is meant for something larger, and your voice is meant for something larger in order to put and put a light on this.
Yeah.
That most people don't know. I mean, I didn't hear about it until we did the concert for Sinatra in December. I had never heard of neurofibromatosis, nor had any information about it. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, we want to shed some light on for you as to how people get involved. Aside from the concert, how can people get involved in this organization?
There's actually a lot of ways to get involved. I mean, here in this town in Las Vegas, I mean, the best way to get involved is contact me directly and say, look, you know, how can I help with a concert? The other way is that, you know, every year we go get most of our funding from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
This last year, this is the fifth, I'm going about to go in a few weeks, and this will be the fifth time that I've gone out to D.C. for these lobbying events. And we go and we to the Hill and we ask for money.
Mm-hmm.
And every year we've gotten it. Actually, since 1996, there's been about $275 million in federally funded clinically oriented research. And so every year we go, we do our work, mm-hmm. we knock on every door in D.C., but then we come home and we have to make sure that the constituents of those senators and congressmen and congresswomen, that they tell them that this is important.
That they're aware.
So another way you can get involved locally and really anywhere across the country, but here especially, is, you know, there's going to be a time at which you're going to need to send a note to your congressman, to send a note to your senator or congresswoman, depending on where you're living, and say, NF is important to us, and please help us support it. The money that we get every year is a Band-Aid. There's a reason why there's still no cure and no treatments. Mm-hmm. You know, we need more, but it provides the bulk of the funding for NF research out there. So that you can help with the concert, that will be here every year. You know, any business that wants to step up and be a sponsor, mm-hmm. we have a tribute journal. There's, you know, there's advertising potential there for anybody. And then we need everybody to just take literally 2 minutes and go to the NF Network website and send a note when the time comes. In about a month, you're going to start seeing those notes go out, and that's when we need to go, en masse.
Well, if you need help from House Seats, we are here for you to do that.
Great.
Our email list is quite extensive here locally, so we can send that out and advise all of our members to do the same.
That would be great. Yeah.
In a small capacity, when we did our concert at Sinatra, we raised money through the raffle prizes, but also on the side after the concert was all put together. And we have a check here for you for $500 for the NF Foundation.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Anything else we can do, we're going to keep putting on set lists, and we're going to definitely put another one on for you and for Emma and for your wife to be a part of.
Well, we appreciate it. You know, every dollar makes a difference, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate your help.
We really appreciate you in our community. I mean, another staple person here in the community. Jeff also has a video that he produced that we'll close out this House Seats Presents with that video. We'll run that here, but I want to thank you very much for being here and for being a part of the show and for talking to more about Emma and about your life and about what you do and the legacy that you plan to leave.
Great.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
inspiration came from our daughter. You know, when you find out your daughter has a disorder that has no cure and no treatments, you make two choices. You either do nothing or you do something.
She's a very kind, loving little girl, but also very stubborn and strong-willed. So I think those two combinations are going to make her very strong as things come up in her life.
She definitely has more that we found. We found a second brain tumor earlier this year, and we found probably 5 or 6 new tumors that we hadn't discovered before. But if you met her on the street, you'd never know. The intent, even with the very first concert, was to raise awareness for NF on a grander scale, to make a difference not just for Emma, but for, you know, the well over 100,000 people living with NF in this country. And I'm proud to say that we're doing that and moving ahead to do it even better.
I feel blessed every day that he's Emma's father and that he's changing other people's lives too and making a difference.
I'm humbled and blown away by our progress and what we've done. But at the same time, I'm so touched by the fact that this is something I love to do and we're getting to help people on top of it.
He's one of the most selfless people I've ever met. And the fact that he's so giving in so many ways is what's making this successful and continue for these 5 years.
Every year, I just love going to it and it's so much fun.
Thank you for coming, everybody.